Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, broadcasting from our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Henry Magala. Some of you may remember Henry from when he was one of the deans over there at the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District, but he's also a very talented photographer. And today, we're going to be talking about Henry and his experiences covering the protest and the standoff, the now infamous standoff at the La Mesa Police Station on May 30th. Henry, welcome to the show.
Miriam, thank you so much. Thank you for you. Thank you for letting me be here. Thank you for East County Magazine and the work you do to promote, to cover and promote social justice in East County and beyond. Thank you for letting me be here.
Well, we appreciate that. It's been a, needless to say, a tough week for all of us here. So, Henry, you went out to cover the demonstration. Can you tell us what happened when you arrived? What was it like in the beginning around 1:30?
Actually, that morning, I didn't even know there was a demonstration planned for La Mesa. My daughter, who is really my educator, and she's so enlightened, so dedicated to issues of social justice in the community, let me know that she was going to this demonstration at the La Mesa Police Department to protest the violence that we all witnessed horrifically against George Floyd. And then we were trying to figure out which protests were legitimate, which one weren't, because evidently there was some conflicting information that some protests were scheduled under the auspices of a legitimate protest, but they were scheduled by white supremacists. The Black Lives Matter website was telling people not to attend certain protests because they weren't organized by them, although they were being promoted by them, but they were being promoted by white supremacists. So
correct. We should note here that NBC News at the national level broke a big story about some white supremacist group and how they were infiltrating in Minnesota and some other places around the country, inciting violence at these rallies. And they were actually posting on social media. They had a Twitter handle that looked like it was Antifa. It had the word Antifa in it, telling people to go forth and, you know, loot neighborhoods. By the day after this rally, they were encouraging people to go loot neighborhoods. And it turned out it was a white supremacist group behind that. So there's still a lot we don't know about some of the things that happened later in La Mesa, you know, by nighttime when banks were burning and looting was going on. You weren't there for that, but you were there for the mostly peaceful protests during the daytime and then what became a very tense standoff at the police station later. So when you first arrived, what was the mood like?
So my daughter and I decided to meet there. It was about 1:30. I got there about 1:15. I parked on Orange Street, just south of the police station. People were starting to amass. There might have been a couple hundred people off at Dale Street in the parking lot, just towards La Mesa, but east, about a block east of the police station. People were maintaining social distance and just starting to show up.
Most of them were wearing masks, it looked like.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was wearing masks. Everybody was social distance. It was pretty scattered because there weren't that many people there. It was still widespread. People were just showing up. There was just slowly coalescing with folks. And spontaneously, a chant here and there would start up saying Black Lives Matter or say his name, George Floyd.
I can't breathe. I saw something like
I can't
that.
Breathe. And I got some videos of that. But it was pretty passive, pretty amorphic. Spread out in the parking lots. And then around 1:30, some people who must have been part of the organizers of the event had a microphone, came out, welcomed everybody, reinforced to everybody multiple times that this is the purpose of the event was to protest the police brutality that everybody witnessed against George Floyd.
And in La Mesa, there was also an issue of a La Mesa police officer shown on a viral video sort of pushing a black man into a seated position near the trolley station. And at the time, we didn't know all the details of that, but that further made La Mesa perhaps a special target of the protests more than some of the other areas locally. After the speakers and the people on the megaphone, there was a march that began. How did that go?
So the speakers reinforced multiple times to the group that this was going to be a peaceful protest over and over. They stressed it. They reinforced it. That's what they're there for. They organized it. And so they started walking from the parking lot towards the La Mesa police station behind a banner, a large white banner that said George Floyd.
So they were chanting the names of some of the other people who've died at the hands of police, black people who've died mm-hmm. at the hands of police, like Trayvon Martin and some others, as well as George Floyd. And I understand that up to this point, Henry, had you seen any La Mesa police anywhere when you were at the police station before the march took off? Were the police? How were they acting?
There was no police on the drive to La Mesa. There were no police out around the parking lot. There were no police. And so the march started walking towards the police station, and we walked to the police station and walked up the stairs and up onto the patio to the front doors of the police station. There were no police there or city officials, nor on the roof, or I didn't see anyone anywhere. And then the crowd continued with their chants, and many people had signs. By this time, the crowd had grown multiple times. There are many, many hundreds, maybe over 1,000 by now, and the crowd had spilled over into the street, into the parking lot, people holding signs, people chanting. And this continued maybe for, I don't know, time disappears, but at least a half an hour, maybe half an hour, 20 minutes.
Then they headed out on a march.
The leaders led the protesters from the front doors of the police station away past the post office, but then took a right to University and then took a left up University. And there were so many marchers by then that they had spilled into the streets from the sidewalk into the oncoming traffic, into the median, into the traffic going in the same direction, heading west on University.
So after that, they made their way to the freeway and onto Interstate 8. And at this point, there were thousands of them. They literally blocked and shut down the freeway at one point. And I know you've noted in your reporting quite a contrast between how the California Highway Patrol, or CHP officers, handled this really massive crowd and then later what we saw at the La Mesa police station. So tell us how the CHP officers handled the situation.
So they went down University, they turned around, a lot of cars were stopped, but they were in support of the demonstrators. They honked in support and chanting and supporting. So I stayed behind taking pictures, and the crowd had moved back up University, up Baltimore, and took a right over the overpass of Spring Street and down onto the highway, where at the far end of the bridge, the police stopped the crowd, and I wasn't near the front. I could see across the bridge, and I thought, they're going to go onto the highway. I don't think I should do that. And so then I could see the protesters passing the police and continuing onto the highway. And I decided I probably should follow them, find out. I'm here. I'm going to go see what's going on.
Yeah, they actually broke through a police barricade. And yet the CHP officers were pretty chill from what we understand. They just kind of stood back and let it happen. They weren't.
Yeah,
you know,
at this aggressive point, it was all the crowd, the demonstrators were expressing their frustrations as the whole purpose of the demonstration. The police were allowing it. They were allowing it to happen. I wasn't at the far end of the bridge, but I can understand them wanting to keep the protesters off the highway for obvious reasons. At the near end of the bridge, there were two other cruisers. Originally, there weren't many protesters there because they had all gone to the far end trying to cross. But once they got stopped, they started coming back to the two cruisers where I was and started surrounding the police there and chanting at them, not only to them. Police were unresponsive and eventually got in their cars and drove away to the cheers of the crowd. But that ended up being uneventful.
And then there was a point in there where things looked like they could get a little bit tense. A couple of the protesters got a bit aggressive, not physical, but we have photos of, like, you know, a woman with a mask off, leaning right up in the face of a police officer, sort of shouting at him. At one point, other officers sort of pulled back one of their own from another aggressive protester. So, there was a potential for something to happen, but it didn't. The California Highway Patrol officers seemed to be going out of their way to show a lot of restraint in these early hours of the, with the march that blocked the freeway.
This all happened a little while later, so I ended up going across the bridge and down onto the highway. By the time I got to the highway, the large group of the protesters were not even visible. They had gone so far east on I-8, they weren't there anymore. So I walked a bit further east until I saw the crowd, a large crowd, coming back on West 8. And there was a line of police, and there seemed to be a discussion. This is a couple hundred yards away from me. There was a discussion between the protesters and the police, and it seemed like they wanted the crowd to take the exit, the El Cajon exit, off of the 8 to get off the highway. And even the leaders of the demonstrators were trying to get the crowd to go off of the highway onto the exit. But there were some individuals as part of the group that wanted no part of that. They were going to stay on the highway and keep walking on the highway. And there were some California Highway Patrol officers that made a symbolic effort to try to stop them from continuing down the highway. But the marchers kept on walking right past them, and the California Highway Patrol just, they didn't get in their way. They didn't confront them. They just kept on backstepping, coming to walk past them, going backwards. And then three dozen protesters stayed on the highway, walked all the way down to the overpass of El Cajon. And that's where things seemed to have dissipated. And the protesters got off the highway, got onto the bank off the highway, because it got a little bit squirrely there, because somehow a bunch of cars got on the road, started driving down the highway down west. And so the California Highway Patrol were stuck and challenged between letting the protesters do their protesting and keeping them safe from the cars and keeping the cars from hitting people. And so that was going on for a few minutes, but the protesters got off the highway. So then that whole confrontation took its own course. The Highway Patrol formed a line right at the shoulder, and some of the protesters came down, knelt in front of the Highway Patrol with their arms up and chanting. And then a few minutes after that, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes after that, another large group that must have come from somewhere down the highway caught up to us again and overtook this peaceful part and became much more aggressive. The Highway Patrol stepped back all the way to the median, then ended up leaving. We walked back east on the highway where there was a long line of, I don't know, it was a couple of hundred officers, I don't know where they were from, that stopped the crowd there. The crowd caught up to them. The police were relaxed. The crowd wasn't aggressive. And then everybody dissipated. We started walking back towards La Mesa, and I was with another photographer, and he got a phone call. His colleague was at the station. They said, the police are starting to use tear gas on the crowd. Things are getting, and we could look up. We looked across the highway, and we could see clouds of tear gas going up into the sky.
So it was going through your head when you saw that.
I was just puzzled. I really am not sure. You know, here we are. We were just spent all this time on the highway. The protesters were making a point. They were doing what they were supposed to be doing, protesting. The police were letting them do it. It was uneventful. Tense at times, but the demeanor of the police kept things passive, and the protesters subdued their colleagues and kept things passive. So then we looked over and I go, wow, something has substantively just changed. I mean, something just went really different with the tear gas at the station. Because I've been out there for hours by now. I'm tired. I think everybody's tired.
So you made your way back to the police station, and you got there and you found a very different scene than what you had seen earlier in the beginning at the same station, or for that matter on the freeway. Tell us what it was like when you arrived back at the La Mesa police station by this time late in the afternoon.
Yeah, so I rushed back to the police station as quick as I could. There were people leaving there. A lot of protesters were already leaving. They were crying. Their eyes, they were all wet. Their eyes were red. There were people pouring water on them. They're trying to wash the tear gas from them and say, hey, what's going on?
You said your own eyes started to burn. You were feeling
And then by
too.
The time I caught up to the station, the crowd was on the east side parking lot, and I was walking behind the crowd, and there was already tear gas. The residue of the tear gas was in the air, and I was pretty far away from it, and I had to stop. I had to walk away a couple of blocks and rinse my eyes up, because I couldn't see anymore because the tear gas had closed my eyes. It was just so painful. I'd never been exposed to it before.
Wow. So you worked your way to the south side of the police station, across the street, you said, kind of near the post office, and you were actually trying to distance yourself a little bit from the crowd, still cover this, still photograph it, but make sure that it would be clear to the police that you were not protested, that you were a member of the media. Tell us how they should have been able to tell that you were a member of the media, Henry.
Well, when I was on the highway, there was a yellow safety vest discarded on the side of the highway, one of those with a reflecting tape, bright yellow. So I picked that up and wore it, and I had my press badge pinned to the front of my chest.
Which clearly says press, and it's issued, the official press pass issued by the San Diego Police.
Yeah, it's the pass that's issued by the San Diego Police. It says San Diego Police on it. So I have my pass pinned to my front chest. I was wearing a long sleeve fluorescent bright yellow t-shirt, long sleeve, and I had this fluorescent safety vest on.
So then what happened?
So I walked behind the crowd and the police. I walked around. I got my eyes working again. I walked behind the city council, and there was a little trail between the city hall and the post office. And I wanted to be separate and distant from the crowd. And again, I had my yellow long sleeve shirt on, my yellow vest, my police badge, press media bag. And I was standing pretty much by myself by the post office across the street from the police. The main event was going way off to my right, about 100 yards. That's where all the crowd had stayed together in one, pretty much amassed just in one little parking lot. They weren't surrounding the police station. They weren't encircling it or anything. They were all in one little parking lot. Although the police were mostly amassed on their patio, but they had people spaced every, I don't know, 10 feet maybe around the building, and had snipers, but not with guns. Snipers with the pepper spray paintballs and the rubber bullet shotguns up on the on the second story.
And apparently beanbags too. We understand that there was a woman in the crowd a little bit later on, around 7:30, who tragically was hit in the head with what they say was a beanbag. And as we're taping this, at least she's still in an ICU unit in the hospital. That was a little bit later. But then you yourself got hit with some pepper spray or pepper spray paintballs, you've described them. Tell us what that was like.
So I was, like I said, I was trying to separate myself and distance myself. So I was standing pretty much alone as much as I could off to the side. And then I felt this pop, this thud on my pants. It didn't really hurt. It felt just, you know, like powder. It was like a thud. And I looked down and there was this big white spot of powder on my right side pocket, or I don't remember what side now, on my pocket by my pants. And I had been hit by one of these pepper ball paints, whatever, the pepper spray paintball things. And I didn't even know what those were filled with. And thank goodness it hit me in the leg. It did, like I said, it didn't hurt. It was just more of a thud.
And these were La Mesa police officers, not CHP at this point. La Mesa police officers, they were up on the roof of their building or the upper floors of their building?
It was a balcony on the second floor.
Okay.
Right above the patio.
So they were shooting off this balcony. And there were also a lot of San Diego sheriff officers up there as well. And then tell us over the next hour, it sounds like this was just an absolute, you know, bombardment that started slow and built. Tell us what you saw.
Whatever started this had already started before I even got to the police station. So I got there when this was already going on. I was off to the side, just got hit. There was a police helicopter up above circling for quite a while with their speaker on, saying this is an unlawful assembly. People had to disperse or they'll be arrested. And they were repeating that over and over.
And yet, to our knowledge, nobody ever was arrested for civil disobedience, which is what they call it when people remain past an unlawful assembly. Typically, an unlawful assembly is declared if they have some reason to believe a crowd is going to be violent, if somebody had thrown a rock or broke a window or something like that. But yet, you say that despite all of this, even after an hour or so of all of this, how was the crowd behaving for the most part?
The crowd, like I said, was concentrated in this one parking lot. They were trying to inch their way towards the police station, but not in an aggressive way, just kind of like a step here, a step there. Most of them, 90% of them, were just holding signs up.
Did you see any broken windows at that point in the station?
No, none of my pictures and none of the, from this side, again, I'm on the south side of the police station. Mm-hmm. There was graffiti on the lower walls of the, it wasn't at the station, it was of the outside of the, correct, sidewalks of the railings.
Did you observe any protesters throwing anything at any officers or officers' vehicles?
I did, because I was far from the crowd. I didn't see anybody throw anything, but there were, over the course of the evening, maybe two or three rocks that I saw that had been thrown towards, I'm not even sure you can say this word, the police. They were so poorly thrown that one almost hit me across the street. So somebody from way back somewhere in the crowd had thrown a rock. Several rocks. I'm not sure if it's the same person, multiple people, but I was there, maybe two or three rocks were thrown.
Yeah, and this was after the crowd was being fired on, from what you could see.
Yeah, and this was well into the whole firing.
I should say we've talked to another photographer whose perception was that there was a couple of rocks thrown from the crowd before the shooting started. So conflicting opinions there, depending on what viewpoint somebody was in.
And the shooters, the people with the paintball spray guns, were not only on the second floor balcony, but they were also down on the patio also. And they're trying to spot the people throwing things and trying to shoot them back.
So then you've told us your back was starting to hurt. You've been on your feet a long time. So you decided to sit down on the curb. And you would ride across the station, and you'd been there for quite a while. And all of a sudden, you got hit again by pepper spray paintballs. And tell us what that experience was like.
I was there at least, I don't know, an hour, 2 hours. And there was also some large broadcast media people there with large cameras. And we were talking to the police and let them know we're media. And so we were standing, because we're pretty far away from the demonstration, shooting images of the demonstration. And I'd been there and went back across to the post office. My back was hurting, so I decided to sit on the curb, just sitting there. And I was probably sitting there for maybe half hour, 45 minutes, maybe even longer. And next thing I know, is going so fast. I don't even know how many times I was hit.
Three, and you're four, hitting or five chest, times. So they hit you in the chest with these things.
Well, my knees were up because I was on the curb, so they hit me in my knees, my chest, my camera bag. It was just multiple shots just hit me.
And what did that feel like?
Again, more like puffs, more like thuds. You know, it wasn't painful. There was no pain involved. It was a bunch of thuds. But one of the capsules exploded and it went up into my nose and into my eyes and under my glasses and instantly became incapacitated. It was amazing how painful all that is. I couldn't see, couldn't breathe, I couldn't do anything. So thank goodness people rushed to me, grabbed me, picked me up, helped me walk away from there.
Yeah, you said some young Muslim girls wearing hijabs helped you up and
thank goodness. Yeah, this about a half hour earlier, a group of young, maybe teenage, 20-year-old Muslim girls with their hijabs, they walked up with their hands up, just standing there. One of them may had a sign, three or four of them. They ran up to me and they're the ones who grabbed me, walked me away, rinsed my eyes out, got me around the corner from the post office so I wouldn't get shot again. There was a little makeshift first aid unit kind of there where they were taking care of people who had been shot by the rubber bullets and had some open wounds.
First aid station, this was set up by the protesters or by?
No, I talked to one student who was a medical student from UCSD who was there and who this one person who was cleaning the wound of one of the people who was shot by a rubber bullet. I don't know who she was with.
Do you believe you were targeted because you were media? I mean, do you believe that this was just random, or do you think that given that how you were dressed and
you know,
what you were wearing and how far away you were from everyone that they should have known?
It's hard to answer. I can't talk about the intent of... I was shot intentionally. Whether they knew I was media, I don't know.
Did you see other media members who were hit?
One... Earlier, about another hour before that, there was another media guy. He had a nice, large, expensive camera. An Asian guy hit in the leg by a rubber bullet and resulted in an open wound that he had taken care of.
We have a picture of that on our website, as well as another protester that was struck in the chest.
He was shot in the chest. He said he was just standing there in the street, just standing there. And he even knows the police officer who shot him. He kept on pointing at him, yelling at him. He says, "I was just standing there and you shot me. Why did you shoot me? I was just standing there."
Yeah. So at 7:59, something rather unusual occurred. Tell us about that.
Like the time before that, the crowd was most of them had their hands up. Most of them had their signs up. Many of them were just sitting there across the street. The police would throw tear gas, shoot the paintballs, give them back. They would go back. They would come forward.
Most of them were still chanting, you know, Black Lives Matters. Mm-hmm. Nothing threatening. A couple of them did shout some vulgar insults at the police, you said.
Yeah.
But that's not illegal.
So then some lady, a white blonde lady, came up slowly, walked up to the police, had a flag on a staff, a big American flag, and walked up the stairs and handed it with both her hands held open up, handed an American flag to the police, probably as a symbol to say, you know, we're all on the same side on this. I don't know. I should interpret because I don't know. But it wasn't an aggressive act.
They accepted it.
And a policeman came out quickly and tentatively, because, you know, I'm not sure he didn't know what this was set up. He tentatively, quickly grabbed it, took it away, accepted it, took it, and gave it to the colleague behind him who took it away and quickly put it away.
So I've observed major protests before and written about a lot of them. And certainly in San Diego, where they're more accustomed to these large kind of demonstrations, we've seen things like once an unlawful assembly is declared, they give people plenty of time to clear out. If they don't, they'll do things like, you know, start arresting and zip tying the ones that refuse to leave. They're always given an option, you know, leave or be arrested. And then those who choose to stay, they arrest them generally peacefully. They may put them on a bus somewhere, let them cool their heels for a while. They get a minor citation or fine, misdemeanor, and that's it. But the protests usually end peacefully without people being physically injured. Tell me what happened 4 minutes after the woman gave the police the flag.
So it happened at 7:59. I know it's 7:59 because I have a picture of it and my pictures are time stamped. And so I can just look at the time. And at 8:03, my next picture is when the police decided, I guess at that point, just right before dark, they've had enough, that they started throwing countless tear gas canisters. I mean, the picture you can see at 7:59. Okay, 7:55 is the lady with the flag. 7:59 is a picture of people just standing in the front of the police station, their arms up, their signs up, people just walking, drinking water. At 8:03 is my next picture.
And by the way, 7:30 is when the woman had been struck in the head by the beanbag and taken to the hospital. Although you weren't aware of it, it must have been the other side from where you were. But certainly, there had already been a pretty serious injury. We know the police were aware because we have a witness who told one of our other reporters that they rushed to the police and asked them to call 911 and that the police did not break the line to do it.
Yeah, I can see things happening because there were groups of protesters rushing here and there and things. So I knew things happened, but I didn't know what happened. What I do have a sequence of photographs of, and you can put on your website, is one of the protesters just sitting on the curb with his hands both up, with three or four of them just right across the street from the police station, sitting there, their hands up. After the police had shot a lot of tear gas to disperse the crowd, they decided to stay there with their hands up, sat there. And the next picture is one of them doubled over on the ground because he must have been shot by a rubber bullet, and his colleagues had to throw them over his shoulder and get him out and get him to medical care because he had been hurt badly by something.
Very disturbing. A lot of questions that this raises about the conduct of the police, certainly. So then you say they had this, what you called sort of a shock and awe campaign, where they just started hurling a whole bunch of canisters of everything, tear gas, maybe rubber bullets, pepper spray balls, all kinds of things. And here's a little bit of what that sounds like based on Henry's recording. And at that point, you say the police rushed out of the station. What happened?
So like 8:03, my next picture is that's when all the canisters started coming out everywhere. You know, before they were just targeted at the crowd, but this one, they circled the police station. Canisters everywhere. It was a wall of smoke. Hundreds of those pepper ball shots were being fired. Rubber bullets, flashbang grenades going off. People scattered, were going in all different directions. It just created chaos. It was like throwing water on a grease fire, just like... They were just, like I said, at 7:59, people are standing there with their signs up. By 8:03, all this stuff came out. People were scattered, ran everywhere. The police, I don't know where they came from, but many, 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 many more than were previously standing on the patio were coming out and coming down the stairs, and people were running because I didn't know if they were going to charge the crowd, charge me. Am I going to be arrested? Am I going to be beat up? I had no idea
or
what
shot.
The intent
they were,
or shot or, yeah, been
yeah,
shot
guns,
twice.
And some of those guns, I looked at the pictures. They're dark. They're all black. They didn't have the telltale orange that means it's a non-lethal weapon. So it was hard to tell for sure just what they were getting ready to fire at people. Thank God it was not, it was not bullets. We will say that. But you were at that point, how were you feeling? You were fearful? Well,
I was very afraid. I didn't know what was happening. Obviously, this had become very different. The quantity of shots fired, the tear gas being thrown was exponentially more than previously. All these police that you didn't see previously were coming
and
down
the
stairs.
And where was your daughter? Was she still there when this was going on?
No, you know, I never connected with my daughter. She didn't bring her phone. She was there. Because she posted pictures of herself later, but she and I never connected that afternoon.
Wow. So what did she tell you she saw?
She left early. She walked up and down University, had her sign, saw that people were going on the highway. She didn't want any part of that and left.
Okay.
She left early.
All right. So when they did the charge and they came out and they encircled the police station, they were forming this perimeter and they had these big guns, whether they were non-lethal or whatever, that was the point where you've told us that you decided it was time to leave. You didn't want to become
a casualty. I didn't know what the intent, I didn't know what was going on. I knew the police had changed tactics. There was a different agenda, and I didn't know what that agenda was. They were coming out, a lot of tear gas, scattered everybody. They circled the police station. I have a picture of them with a line across the street, standing where I was previously standing at the post office. And then I thought, you know, it's getting dark now. They're coming out. I better go home. So now I wish I'd have stayed. I didn't know. I would have never guessed that what happened later that night would have happened because I didn't sense that in the energy of the crowd.
Yeah, and we're still trying to put the timetable together of exactly when the first acts of looting and fires began. We had another photographer who arrived later, and Paul Cruz, and he came down there to find vehicles set on fire in front of City Hall. We know that there was a fire inside City Hall at one point, so that they all had their hands full. And then there was looting occurring about a block away at the La Mesa Springs shopping center. They'd set fire inside the Vons. There were looters, I mean, just groups of them. We don't know who these people were. They seemed to be every different race from the videos, so it didn't look like stereotypical Black Lives Matter folks, nor stereotypical white supremacist groups that we talked about earlier. It was very disturbing. You know, you saw like young teenage girls in pretty dresses running and looting, and others who were big sort of, you know, thuggish looking characters and everything in between. And, you know, that was going on. And at some point, the police came down and tear gassed there. They were trying to put all these fires of vehicles in multiple places out. And then at some point, we hear there were bricks and rocks that were being placed strategically around town. And several witnesses have told us that they saw groups of vehicles coming in the late evening, filled with people largely dressed in black, wearing dark masks. It sounded like it was many of these people, maybe all of them, were not the people who had been at the protest. They did not seem to be those who had been at the police station or the march earlier in the day, although we don't know for sure. And then sadly, they later set fire to the Chase Bank and the Union Bank that burned to the ground, as well as the historic Randall Lamb an Art Deco building there. And it was just, you know, chaos for the rest of the night, of course. We had a city councilman tell us in the middle of the night they were worried that, that they might lose the entire downtown historic district, which fortunately did not happen. But how did you feel when you woke up the next morning or whenever you heard about it and you realized how different things had gone from this peaceful protest that you were covering earlier in the day or even the tense standoff yeah. at the police station?
That's a good question, because I woke up the next day totally surprised at what I had found out happened later on that evening, because nothing that I witnessed would have reflected that the crowd was intending to behave that way, had the capacity to behave that way, were wanting to behave that way. I mean, the leaders were reinforcing this was a peaceful demonstration. I was puzzled. I really was confused the next day. And then, sorry I didn't stay, but a lot of questions, because they said nothing that I experienced would have reflected to me that the crowd that I saw and observed, documented, yeah. would have behaved the way they did, even following the interaction with the police at the station. So, and it happened so much later. I think we broke up, like I said, 8:03 is when the tear gas came out of the station. So by 8:05, 8:10, everybody was gone. And I had heard from neighbors there that the fire started around 11 o'clock. That's like 3 hours later. That's a long time.
The bank fires. It was much earlier than that things were burning down at Vaughn's, and vehicle fires, including a battalion chief's car that burned. Mm-hmm. The looting, there was also looting going on at Grossmont Center and some other places. So there was a lot going on somewhere in between there. And listeners, we are still working to put the timetable together. If anybody was down there, knows what happened, we want to hear from you. You can contact the editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We've been interviewing multiple photographers and journalists and bloggers who were there. There were people who were live streaming. Some of them got actual video of the arsonist work, and some of them were even recognizable. They were very brazen. So we're going to be talking to some of these other people. We're going to be doing upcoming interviews with additional people who were witnesses to the scene of these historic events. And certainly there's a lot more questions to be answered, but we really appreciate, Henry, your courage in being down there, putting yourself in harm's way to help document these very, very important events at the protests against police violence that ironically wound up resulting in some police violence locally.
Miriam, thank you for letting me. I just want to mention also that on Saturday, my daughter and I, as soon as we found out, went out to La Mesa and helped clean up the looting at the Vaughn Shopping Center, helped clean up and organize yeah. and get things back together. Shops were feeding people. It was a community. It was nice community energy. People were cleaning up the yeah. graffiti, cleaning up the streets.
You know, I want to talk about that for a minute. La Mesa is my hometown. It's long before this, it's long been likened to Mayberry RFD. It's kind of the place where, you know, everybody gets along and everybody likes each other and you can count on your neighbors. And so we did see that spirit of La Mesa the next morning. There was an announcement on social media about let's go help clean up. And the next morning, Sunday morning, there were about 500 to 600 volunteers who showed up. And this was a very different kind of mob from the ones that were burning banks down. These people were armed with shovels and brooms and paintbrushes. And within hours, they had painted over all the graffiti. You didn't see any of the graffiti anymore. They had swept up all of the glass. You know, they were helping the merchants board up the windows, even if the ones that didn't break, with plywood. And then the day after that, you had a team of artists who came through. And they decided, instead of having us look at ugly plywood for however long this goes on for, they started painting murals all over the place. There were flowers, there were butterflies, scenic shots, and there's one where they painted a mural of George Floyd, who started all of this. It was the black man slain by the white police officer in Minneapolis, who's now facing murder charges, along with the three other officers that stood around and did nothing. And there's a kind of a makeshift shrine. People have been leaving flowers there in George Floyd's memory. And there's some Black Lives Matter positive messages going on. So that's really heartening to see. We hear that there's a La Mesa Glass Company that has donated a lot of glass. And Barry Jantz and the East County Chamber of Commerce and Phil Ortiz, an El Cajon councilman, actually started it, started a GoFundMe site to help the La Mesa merchants rebuild. Within the first day, they'd raised $100,000 for them, because these are merchants who had been closed for 2 months by the pandemic or been having minimal business if they were doing takeout. Some of them had only been allowed to reopen, you know, like barbershops and things, about 2 or 3 days before the rioting or whatever we want to call this occurred. And so this is really devastating for these little mom and pop businesses. And it was really heartening to see the community come out to help them, apart from, you know, whatever else people may be thinking about La Mesa after looking at what happened at the police station. And later that night with the violence, there's still a lot of good people in my hometown. And I'm really proud of the people that came out to pull everyone together. We saw people of every race, you know, working side by side to begin the process of rebuilding La Mesa. So thank you again, Henry, for all that you've done. We look forward to seeing more of your work. Listeners, you can go to eastcountymagazine.org and click in our top news section there, and you'll be able to see the really dramatic photo essay of Henry's work, as well as some of his videos documenting the events we've been talking about during the protest at the La Mesa police station and through the streets and on the freeway in La Mesa on May 30th. Henry, thanks for joining us today and telling us your story on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you, East County Magazine, and thank you, East County.